Welcome, welcome, welcome on board the Random Ship for this, our 42nd voyage. I'm the captain on this weekly journey, Holt, and with me as always is my first mate and my brother, Alan.
Que pasa?
So for those of you who don't know, we take 25 to 30 minutes every single week, and we wander the waters of the weird, yes, the oceans of the obscure, the rivers of the random.
And if you make it to the end of the episode, you'll be rewarded with your weekly ship fact.
I know in our schedule it says that I have nothing to speak to here, Alan, but I did just have a very quick dad story that is also a man do I feel old story.
Okay.
So I took my son to my office today because I had to pick some stuff up and print off some stuff. And he's all excited. He's going through everything. And he gets to the phone. And he looks at it perplexed. And he goes, "What is this?" And at first I'm like, okay, is he something wrong mentally? Like, how does he not know what a phone is? But he's like, "Why is it connected to this box?" And he has never seen a phone that's like a landline before. So he couldn't figure out what the headset was and why it was connected to this other part, and all the buttons were actual buttons. He's like, "What is it?" It's not like I had a weird like 1970s rotary phone. Like, it's a regular phone. And he's like, he was shocked. It was like his coolest toy that it kept him busy for the whole 20 minutes that I was at work today.
Oh, wow.
I hope that we don't have random long distance charges that I'm now going to be in trouble for. It's like that episode of The Simpsons where Bart calls Australia.
Yep, that's what it's going to be. You're going to have to go to Australia because of this.
And they're going to need to kick me right in the butt.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's it. That made me feel super old because my son doesn't know what anything other than a smartphone is.
That's weird to me because I still think it's... I don't think kids should have phones.
I mean, my son doesn't. The only time he's even ever touched my phone was on the way back from Cancun last year because we had to isolate on the way home. But because of where we live, we had a layover. So we had to isolate and we weren't allowed to leave the airport hotel bedroom that we had until our flight time. So we had like almost a full 24 hours in this small hotel room. So I downloaded some like great games for 3.5-year-olds on your cell phone, you know? And so that's the only time he played with it. And then he wanted it. It's crazy how quickly he's A, caught on to using it, and B, he was like, "Can I use your phone now? Can I play a game on your phone? Let's play your phone." I'm like, "No, we're turning this off."
That was your mistake.
Like, even yesterday, I downloaded Need for Speed Hot Pursuit.
Onto your phone?
For my PS4.
Oh.
And I was playing, he loves cars, so I'm like, he can sit and watch and he'll be entertained. But he wanted to play as well, so I let him use the joystick and I did the gas and the brake. He clearly was not doing well. He was just going from side to side on the road, smashing into things.
But isn't that how everybody plays Need for Speed?
He got so mad when it was time to turn it off. He's like, "Oh!" I'm like, "You've gone 6 meters in 6 minutes. The mission's over."
Just reminds me of, was it last Christmas when I was visiting? We were playing the Lego Star Wars or whatever. And he would jump on and just keep running into the wall.
Yeah, and we'd be delayed. We'd be like, "No, come this way."
Yeah, come on, nope, come, you gotta jump up, nope, you're okay, you're dead again.
You have to remember, the only game he's ever played is I bought him the Paw Patrol game when he was like 2.5 to work on his dexterity.
Oh.
And so now he can play that like a champ, but it's a side scroller where you just have to like scroll to the right and jump. And so he knows how to do that, but even like double jumping, it took him like a year to be confident in double jumping.
No, you don't have to tell me that. I watched him play that game too.
You know who sucks at that game? Grandpa Dan. He was so bad. It took him 45 minutes to do a level.
Seems really bad when your 4-year-old can do it in like 10
minutes. Told you. Technology is not his thing. Did you have anything happen to you this week, Alan? Or did you want to move into some This Day in History?
I actually did have a little bit of a funny story that happened last night. As you and all of our many listeners know, I have been partaking in a lot of karaoke lately.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I went with one of my friends last night to karaoke, and we sang some songs. And after the second song I sang, the guy, I don't know if you'd call him the MC or the DJ, whoever, the guy who sets up the karaoke
host.
The host, sure. I'm stepping off the stage and he leans over. He's like, "Hey, before you step down, can I ask you something? Do you work at the Dollarama?"
No. How did he know?
No, I do. I do not work at the Dollarama. He said, "Okay, because there's only two people in Lethbridge with deep voices, and I figured you must be one of them, and the other one's me, so."
Voice brothers!
So this was a legitimate conversation I had into microphones in front of a bar full of people.
The only thing more awkward was that was when I graduated university and the dean announced my name and then looked at me and went, "Really?
Are you sure?"
Do you remember that?
Yes. Quick double take.
Alan, I'm glad that you don't work at the Dollarama. That
Me
is, I'm happy for your career prospects. Like that.
I'm also glad I'm known as one of the three people in Lethbridge with the deep voice.
Yeah, you're one of the deep voice people. You guys should start a Facebook group.
There'd be three of us.
Well, Alan, let's find out what happened this day, September 8th, in history. Alan, we open the big old book of history today and turn to the year 1504, where today, September 8th, Michelangelo's David was unveiled at Piazza del Signoria in Florence.
Nailed it.
I know, that's my Italian statue, is better right? than my Icelandic. Yeah, that's
it
the
is.
One
it's
with
much
the
better.
Small wiener.
Oh, that's what you remember it by.
Well, he's so proud of it. He's standing there like, "Look at my small wiener. It's made of marble."
I mean, I guess if that's the...
Well, that's what people don't know about Michelangelo's David, is it actually, there's a speaker inside, and when you press his belly button, that's the song that plays.
Oh, sorry, what's the song? Just for the people in the back?
Oh, now I have to remember it. "Look at my small wiener, it's made of marble." You should sing that at your next karaoke.
No. I don't think it's an option, but I won't ask.
With your deep voice, it would be perfect. Fast forward 18 years, Alan, to 1522, and the world's first circumnavigation was completed by the Magellan Elcano expedition in their ship, the Victoria. So it's also a ship fact.
Oh, I might be wrong, but I feel like this might have been a ship fact.
I would not be surprised. What's interesting... is I saw that it was the Magellan Elcano thing, and I was like, okay, I think this has to be some, like, secret racism thing, because this shows how little I know about history. I forgot Magellan was Spanish, so he was a person of color, like, anyway, but I'm like, I've only ever heard of Magellan. Like, who's this Elcano person? Has history, like, hidden him? No, he was actually just someone who actually tried to overthrow Magellan halfway through their circumnavigation. And then in Asia, Magellan got killed by some natives. So then the crew couldn't agree on a new captain. So they elected two guys who within 4 days both got killed themselves.
Oh.
And then Elcano took over. So it's the Magellan-Elcano circumnavigation because they each did half because Magellan died halfway through.
The more you talk about this, the more I'm pretty sure this is a ship fact that we've covered. But it's just convenient that we get to do it again.
Fine, moving right along. We go forward 43 years to 1565, and St. Augustine, Florida is founded. It's the oldest continually inhabited settlement in America.
Weird. I've never heard of it.
You haven't?
I've heard of Florida.
I was there on part of my anniversary. It was fantastic. They have the only wine tasting class I ever went to was at the winery in St. Augustine. They also have a great distillery. You've had some of their gin, actually. You said it tasted like
pine
trees.
Is that the
one
that tasted? I was going to say.
Or Christmas trees.
Christmas trees is what I said.
Moving ahead, 318 years, Alan. We are in Middle America, in Montana, actually, when the Northern Pacific Railway was completed, with the golden spike being placed in Montana, signifying the end of the railroad construction.
That sounds like a big deal. I don't know anything about trains, but that sounds important.
Well, this connected the Great Lakes of Minnesota to the coast in Oregon, and it was 6,800 miles or 10,900 kilometers of track. And what's interesting is, as you know, you've been to Minnesota and you've been to Montana. Yes. You know where Seattle is. Montana's in between the two. So this kind of hit me. I was like, oh, is that how they build train tracks? They start at the opposite sides and then meet in the middle? For some reason, I would not think that that's how that happens.
I also would not have guessed that.
I would think they start and then end. But no, I guess they have two crews working simultaneously who come together in Montana, of all places.
That seems like that would, I mean, it would get built way faster.
But then it'd be twice as expensive.
And you'd have to have, like, the people designing it would have to be really smart to make sure that they connected at the right spot.
Yeah,
like imagine
really,
if they,
really
like,
precise.
Were approaching and they're like, oh, man, we're 3 feet to the left.
I don't think it was as easy to change the shape of the tracks back then.
I don't know much about trains, but that doesn't sound easy.
Yeah, you would need bendy stuff.
Bendy stuff's hard to get.
You have just one person riding on horseback back and forth.
I mean, and they didn't have cell phones then, so how did they even keep in touch? Pagers?
They're all drug dealers. Fast forward 9 years, Alan, and the Pledge of Allegiance was recited for the first time, the United States Pledge of Allegiance, on this day in 1892.
Good for them.
I always found the Pledge of Allegiance thing weird.
I find anything that involves chanting weird.
Well, for the states, who is literally the pillar of freedom worldwide, like that's how they're marketed, is like, this is a place of freedom and choice and blah, blah. They start their school days like praising a flag. Like it's like, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and the Republic for which it stands. I don't know. Is that it? How much more is there?
I don't know.
That's all I know. I don't even know if that's right. So our American listeners, I apologize if that was wrong. But that seems very like almost, this may not be popular, but a bit like dictatory or like culty. Like it really.
That's my thing, is anything that involves chanting immediately comes off as culty to me.
Yeah.
When I go to church, I'll do whatever, like singing, praying, communion. But when people start chanting, I'm like, I think I'm going to leave now.
Even this shows how far off we are of that in Canada, in the fact that I think our closest thing to this would be Flanders Fields, the poem. I think that would be like, because like every Canadian kid knows that, except instead of singing it or reciting it once a day, we recite it like on Remembrance Day or Veterans Day in the States on November 11th. That's it. In Flanders Fields, the poppies blow between the crosses row on row that mark the place, and in the sky, the larks still bravely singing fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. Go, Alan.
No.
You don't know the West? We are the dead. Short days ago, we live, felt dawn, saw sunset glow. Oh, our cousins are going to email me mad because I forgot the last part of it. This is a real poetry day.
It is.
Now, I don't mean to disappoint you, Alan, but in the next one, we move ahead 24 years to 1916. And this is not poem related, but it is our usual, man, men suck this day in history. So this day in 1916, Augusta and Adeline Van Buren arrived in Los Angeles after completing a 60-day, 5,500-mile, or 8,851-kilometer, cross-country trip on their motorcycles.
What? That seems fine. I don't know who those people are, but that seems fine.
Random, right? Except these sisters, this was at the onset of World War I. These sisters wanted to prove that women could ride as well as men and would be able to serve in the war as dispatch riders, freeing up the men to do other more difficult tasks.
Oh.
Because they're like, look, we can do a 8,000-kilometer journey. We can ride in Germany or whatever, right?
Yeah.
They also hoped that this would remove one of the primary arguments for denying women the right to vote. I don't know what the argument was. Sorry, I didn't look it up. Wikipedia didn't say so. Maybe one of the arguments was,
I know this. It's anybody who could vote could be drafted.
Oh, see, that's what I was going to guess.
And they didn't think, and it was thought that they didn't think women should be fighting in war.
That's what I kind of thought it was. So that was that. And for their ride, they dressed in military-style leggings and leather breeches, which was a taboo at the time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Scandalous.
But here's where it gets crappy. So they did this great journey. I mean, they did get lost at times, and they had to be saved at one point, but...
Yeah, but they probably asked for directions, because they're not...
They actually did. They got directions, I think, from a group of natives outside Utah. Reports in the leading motorcycle magazine of the day praised the bike. So praised the bike that they were riding, but described the sisters' journey as just a vacation. So they're not making a political statement. They're not doing, oh, they went on for a vacation, but thank goodness they had such a reliable bike. One newspaper even went so far as to write an article accusing the sisters of using this oncoming war as an excellent excuse to escape their roles as housewives and display their feminine counters in nifty khaki and leather uniforms.
Huh.
You just want to dress up all promiscuously in your leather pants and not make me dinner. What are you doing?
Some people, I tell ya.
As we've said before, men are the worst.
Men are the worst.
Moving forward to 1921, Alan, we find ourselves in Atlantic City, New Jersey, where Margaret Gorman won the Golden Mermaid Trophy.
What's the Golden Mermaid Trophy?
Thank you for asking, Alan. It was the honor of being called the most beautiful bathing girl in America.
Let's just pretend I don't know what a bathing girl is.
So basically, she won this beauty pageant, but because she was only 16, she could come back and defend her crown. And so when she came back, they started calling her Miss America, because she was the first person to have a chance to go back to back in this thing. And then the pageant, quickly, the winner from that point on was named Miss America. So she was the very first Miss America.
Oh,
because she
okay.
was the most beautiful bathing girl in the world.
In America, at least. She didn't win Miss
yes.
World.
Beautiful bathing girl in the world. Yeah.
No, in America.
Yes. Oh. Yes, most beautiful bathing girl in America. Take six.
Otherwise, she'd be Miss Earth. Is that what we'd go with? Would that be Miss Earth? Or wait,
I think it's
Miss
like
Universe?
Miss Universe, yeah.
That's pretty presumptuous.
I don't know. I have never seen a movie where there's hot aliens. Don't tell me Avatar.
No, I was going to say Guardians of the Galaxy.
Nope. That raccoon is not hot. I don't know how many times you try to get me to say that raccoon's hot. He is not hot.
I meant Groot, but...
Two more, Alan. 9 years after the Golden Mermaid Trophy, the company 3M begin making Scotch tape on September 8th, 1930.
What did they make before Scotch tape?
I don't know, but what a game changer. I use some of it today.
Wait, so this was the invention of Scotch tape?
This is when they began marketing it. So I guess they had invented it, but now it was being rolled out to the public.
And nobody before had ever invented Scotch tape?
Nope, all glue sticks.
Oh. Yeah, That's super big. Like, what other kind of tapes would there have been?
I don't know. So far today, I've used painter tape, box tape, and Scotch tape.
Is box tape like packing tape?
Yeah, packing tape.
Okay.
And then there's electrical tape. There's
hockey
duct tape.
Tape.
Hockey. Look at you, Canadiana. I like it. Speaking of Canadiana, Alan, we'll end in the year 1952, where this day in history, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, or CBC, made its television debut. They had their very first program hit the air. They were previously just radio.
Oh, so it's now a TV station. I guess that makes sense. What was the show?
It was in the article, but quite frankly, I just forgot to write it down. Probably something that would not hold up well today.
As most things from 1952.
Because men are the worst.
The worst.
Let's take a look at what is happening this week in the news. Our first article this week, Alan, comes from our friends at UPI, or...
Puppy.
Michael Jordan's used underwear, now up for auction.
So how much are you going to bid?
I did look. Guess how much? As of today, we're recording on Labor Day Monday, there are 19 days left in the auction, and it's already up to $1,500.
Wow.
Why? I don't understand why you... I did, though. I saw a picture of the underwear, and I was like, how cool. His underwear say his last name on them. Jordan. I want to... But then I realized, yes, he's Jordan Brand. He has everything that says his name on it. I was like, I want to be that rich and have underwear that says Holt on it.
The thing that makes me... I don't know if it's necessarily... But it makes me cringe is the... underwear bearing signs of, and I quote, definite use. I don't want to know what that means.
He pooped his pants. And they didn't wash it. They're like, that's Michael Jordan's poop? Yes, extra.
Now we can prove it.
Now that I see that there is definite use, if I was a scientist, I'd buy them. Clone Michael Jordan.
Clone Michael Jordan.
Yeah. I would be able to save the Looney Tunes so many times. Our second article this week, Alan, comes from Live Science. Pi calculated to a record-breaking 62.8 trillion digits. This took a supercomputer 108 days to run the calculation. What a waste of time.
What a waste of time. Do you know how many digits you use for math usually?
Like eight?
The first two. 3.14, stop. Sometimes you just use three.
Well, when do you need to be that precise? Like,
never.
When I get that science is, but I doubt NASA's like, well, is it to the 62.8 trillionth? We need to be that precise. I get even like a couple hundred places, like, right? Because when you're talking about the whole universe, a couple hundredths could get you 50 miles off course or whatever, right?
Yeah, like, sure.
I think at 62.8 trillion, you could, like, pinpoint a single hair on someone's head from Mars. I didn't actually know even what pi was before this. Do you know what pi is?
Like, the word or what pi is used for?
What it's used for.
Yeah, it's the ratio of the circumference to the radius of a circle.
Diameter. But very good.
Yes. Sorry, I'm thinking, yes, you're right.
Well done. Your brains are just coming in very handy today.
If there's one thing I'm good at, it's math. So, it's not really something to brag about.
Well, apparently the only reason we've been able to uncover, like, so much knowledge about our universe is because of pi.
Oh.
And you know that, like, the first recordings of pi are, like, from a couple thousand years BC? Like, they didn't know it, obviously, to this precision, but there's documents that state, like, the perfect number or the way to calculate something is to times it by 3.141 something.
159?
No, it'll say, like, their calculation was, like, 3.141 or something. That's how, because they only went to the third digit. They didn't go to the 62.8 trillion.
They didn't even go to the sixth digit.
Lazy Mesopotamians. I don't know if they lived at that time or if that's who did this, but that was the people that came to my mind. I'm going to look through the article because I don't want to piss off any descendants of the Mesopotamians.
Okay. Well, you have fun with that. I think that one of the interesting things about this article is that, like, this isn't what the computer's even built to do. This is just, like, a test, apparently, that people run on computers to see how good they are. It's like, how many decimals can your computer calculate pi to? Seems like a really weird contest, but...
Yeah. I will say, the Mesopotamians, I may not be that far off, because they started in 3100 BC until 270 AD, so I may have actually been correct.
Look at me. You at least had the right time frame.
Who's so smart?
You.
And finally, Alan, we go to the metro.co.uk. Man somehow swallows entire phone, then needs doctors to remove it. I would assume he does. I don't know what's more embarrassing. You swallowed a phone, or you have some knockoff Nokia that is supposed to resemble a Nokia from, like, 2002. Why do you have that phone to begin with?
Also, how did it end up in your mouth?
Yeah, were you so excited? You're like, ha ha ha, and then you just... swallowed it? Like, I don't... and very confused. And you
is that what you do when you're excited?
When you hear me laughing on my phone, I'm putting it in and out of my mouth, going ha 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 ha. You know it's an embarrassing article because they don't mention the guy's name.
They also don't mention how he got it stuck in his stomach.
No, it's just like, yeah, it was there.
There was an unnamed guy who swallowed a phone somehow and had to get it taken out.
I like to think this is like a drug deal gone wrong where they're like, man, the cops are coming. Get rid of your phone. And rather than like smashing it, he's like, okay. This isn't like a piece of paper that you eat. Like, get rid of the drugs. Okay, I'll eat them all. Makes sense.
That seems like a bad idea.
True. I did just finish reading Seth Rogen's book. There is a lot of drug talk in there. I thought he was just a weed guy, but there's drugs I didn't even know about. I do feel like Seth Rogen and I would be friends, though. But to be fair, I think Seth Rogen would be friends with everybody unless you're a terrible political person or a racist. He really doesn't like them. He does seem like a lovable guy. That's all I'm saying.
That's what I learned today.
And pie.
And pie.
And the Pledge of Allegiance and Flanders Fields, at least parts of them. I don't think I could swallow my phone.
I mean, how big is a Nokia 3310? Because, like,
well, this is a knockoff that's actually smaller than that. It's just designed
to. I feel like it's smaller than my iPhone 8, right?
I agree. But it is funny that they're like, we had to get out of him because the lithium battery was going to start rotting and kill him. Just more evidence that this guy is stupid.
In case the him swallowing his phone was not...
Well, if that was an accident, or if it was a challenge, he didn't take the battery out
before. I triple dog dare you to swallow your phone. Well, there's nothing I can do about that.
I have one of the giant iPhone 10 ones. You've seen my phone. My phone's huge. There's no way. Yes. I can barely fit in my pocket. Well, that about wraps it up for this week on The Random Ship. Before we go, check us out on Instagram at randomshipthepodcast or hit us up on email at randomshipthepodcast@gmail.com. Alan, what is this week's ship fact?
This week's ship fact is... The first official cruise ship was the... Let's see if I can do this. Prinzessin Victoria Louise...
Nice.
A German passenger ship of the Hamburg American line, which set sail in 1900. Its size was more similar to a modern yacht than a cruise ship, but it was revolutionary in the idea that the passengers could enjoy traveling to foreign destinations in a luxury ship.
Yeah, I mean, that is crazy. Like, it's only in the last, like, well, I guess since, like, that time that people actually went on vacations longer than, like, half an hour from their house. Like, A, people had to work so hard that they... couldn't afford to take vacations.
Yes.
And then B, they didn't have the ability to go anywhere. And now it's like, yeah, you can, like, we can get to Australia. If we left today, we could get there before this time tomorrow.
Yeah. Pretty easily.
Yeah. All we'd need is a plane.
Yeah.
I don't know. If it wasn't for this lovely German ship, I may not have gotten married because I got married on a cruise ship. So
true, and we both know the only reason you got married was because to go on of a the cruise ship. So,
love is always secondary in destination weddings.
Thank you, German cruise ship from 1900.
If they did more cruises, there'd be less world wars. They gave up on the cruising quickly, and they're like, let's just get to world wars. And now that's why you're not a leader in the cruise industry, Germany. And on that note, thank you so very much for joining us.
And have a great week, everybody. And we both know the only reason you got married was because of the cruise ship.